from last week when Rafael Cohn was nifter, so we spent a couple of minutes talking about him, but it was from someone who had never really met him. We just know him from his svarim, and it's something that every smicha guy in this yeshiva walks around with the Badei HaShulchan under his arm, and certainly we learn from the Sefer each and every day, so we thought it would be most appropriate to hear a perspective about Refival from someone who was extremely, extremely close with him. And right here in our yeshiva, we're zochet to have Rabbi Fink, who had a many, many decades relationship with Refival, with the author of the Badei HaShulchan, and we're so grateful to Rabbi Fink that he agreed to share with us this afternoon.
Thank you. It's a very great honor to be with you, Rabbi Leibowitz, and Yoshir. And just it's very, very fresh. So if I don't keep my composure, I'm going to apologize right away. It's a very, very fresh wound for the people who were his talmidim. So a lot is going to be said about Refival, I'm sure, because he didn't want any hespedim, which was part of his character. He was a very modest person. In a certain manner, he was a very simple person. Very simple. All he did was learn. That's what he did. He was a very simple person that way. And he didn't believe in accolades. He once even said in the Shia that there's a Zohar or whatever that says that whatever they say at a Hesped, they listen to in Shemayim, and it has to be true. So he said one should be very careful what they say about people, that it has to be true. So the fact that he didn't want any Hespedim is, it's unfortunate for many of us, but it certainly fits in his character. One of the things that I think is going to be missing in all of the, I'm sure there'll be articles anyway, etc., is the fact that he was really a Rosh Yeshiva. Well before he wrote Badei HaShulchan, he had a yeshiva. He was a Rosh Yeshiva for 15, 16 years. The major yeshiva was in Crown Heights. I was there, I was the starting class, and we were there for 16 years. Then he moved to East Flatbush when the neighborhood became very, very bad. He moved to East Flatbush, and he had a yeshiva there as well. The yeshiva was jam-packed, so much so that he had to invite another Rebbe, Rabbi Pinchas Khan, should live and be well, to take the overflow. So there were two shiurim there for quite a long time. And one of the greatnesses of Refival was the clarity that he had in learning. He would give a shiur. Three times a week he'd give a shiur, 2 hour shiur, just to go through the sukkahs. And the clarity that he had in the Rishonim and the Achronim, how he put together the sukkah, took it apart, was something that was rather remarkable. It was enjoyable. You would sit there for 2 hours, and the time would go by very, very quickly, because it was just enjoyable. Of course, you had to learn the Gemara first. If I knew that you were coming, I would say, "Master."
You said 5:18. They said 5:18.
So I'm going back to the clarity. He also had a shita that you have to finish a masechta. So we sat there in the yeshiva. Remember the first masechta was the masechta shvuos, out of the way, not yeshivish and masechtos, but from beginning to end. Then we learned Erevin. Again, 2.5 years from beginning to end. As a matter of fact, for Das Kohen, I'm going to talk about Das Kohen in a second. The second sefer Das Kohen is all on the sugyas of Erevin, which were basically the shiurim, came from the shiurim that he gave. That was the shita. The shita was, you have to know shas. So the yeshivish idea was you learn 10 blot, be'inyim, yeshivish Torah. That wasn't his shita at all. His shita was that you had to know. You had to know everything. You had to know kol ha'Torah kulo. The only way to do this is by learning it. Now, his shiurim themselves were if you see it, now he wrote them when he was very young. The first Das Kohen, I think he wrote when he was like 30 years old. He was very, very young. And in the very beginning, you see a little bit about his biography that, because one of the Haskamas was written by Rav Huttner, by his Rebbe. And Rav Huttner and he, they went b'chavrusa for a number of years. When I say b'chavrusa, they didn't sit in the Beis Medrash for a seder and learn together. But they learned an appreciable amount. And he saw in Refival greatness. And he writes that, if you look at the sefer, it's not easy to get the sefer. But in the sefer Das Kohen, there's a whole Haskamah from Refival, but he speaks, and even though he was then going to be a Rosh, he said a shiur in Chaim Berlin. As a matter of fact, the reason that he started in yeshiva was his shiur was so popular that There were other rebbes in the yeshiva that were much older than him, that were closer to the Na'an Hala, and everybody wanted to be in the Feivel Shir because it was like so a wonderful Shir, so enjoyable. So the Futner said, I'll make you your own yeshiva, just don't bother anybody. So he got together with Rabbi Eisenstadt and Rabbi Kornitzer. These were names from a different era. And that's what the yeshiva was in Crown Heights. But it was a unusually well put together shir. That was an Iyun shir, it was a pilpul shir, but it was pshat. It was such a thing, a pilpul pshat shir. That's the shir that he gave. And he's not going to be known for that. And the truth is that he should be known for that. He should be known for that. But he is known more as a posek, and he was a posek. A tremendous clarity in halacha. Tremendous clarity in halacha. Now, I was once, when I would go to Israel, I would also go to Rav Yosef Shir. I had an old chavrusa from the Mir, an Israeli, who's inherited the seat from his father, and I would come and said, I'll find a seat. And I would sit in the seat right in front of Rav Yosef. I think I told you this story. So, a lot of chashuva people came to the Shir. So Rav Yosef was in Teferis Bachurim before he went to the caravan. And it was very formal. Everybody was sitting there. You had to be seated before Rabbi Yosef comes in. Rabbi Yosef would come in. The second he came in, B'hu Rachum, Rabbi Yosef didn't waste a second of anything, and he would start his shir. But they would have on the Mizrachman sitting facing the people. They would have five or six seats. And when Rosh Hashivas came, usually they came from the old Eretz as well, to speak to Rabbi Yosef afterwards in a Dvar Halacha or a Psach Halacha. There was a Rosh Hashiva from America that was sitting there. As soon as Rabbi Yosef came in, he made the bracha shecholach lechavmasa leyoreyov. Rabbi Yosef, without missing the beat, he goes bracha levatola. So after the shiur, usually what happened is you would go over to him, and everybody would go shooting questions all at once. He'd answer them. So then somebody asked him. Cook asked him. It's him. Cook asked him. So if you can't say for you, so who can you say for? Chaim. No. It says Kenanish. No Rab Moshe. That's the end of Letzter. Rab Moshe finds it the last one. So he said, why? He said, because Rab Moshe paskin straight from the Gemara. He didn't he paskin straight from the Sugya of Gemara. If you look at it, Piskei Halacha. So he's the last Pesach to do that. But the truth is, that's what Refival did. That's what Rabbi Yosef did. That's what Refival did. He was able to build the Sugya. And if you look in the Bavli Hashulchan, and that's how he starts every simon with his Hakdama. When you give a Hakdama and you look in the Beurim and you see, it's really the Sugya Sogamara with the Rishonim. And then he proceeds from there, which is the way to learn. The way we learn is backwards. We learn the Mishnah Berurah, and then we go backwards, and maybe we'll look up a tour. Maybe we'll look up a Rishon of the Sugya Sogamara. But that was a tremendous quality that Rav had, and he also had tremendous courage in Psach Halacha. Now this goes back before most of your time. You're all quite young. This goes back to the 90s, the early 90s. Then there was the whole dispute about brain death. There's still a dispute, but then that's when it came to a head about brain death. So remember, he gave the shir. He gave a shul in Tokotok in Flatbush. So he gave a shir on organ transplants at heart. But what he basically said was, so he passed in the way one would imagine he would pass. But then he said something that was, people thought was outrageous. And he says, because of this, you're not allowed to accept the heart. If you're dying, you're not allowed to accept the heart. Because if it's murder, you're not allowed to be involved in the world. And people were like shocked, and they came to complain. The Kuach Nefesh, isn't it? He was adamant. If it's murder, you can't do it. I remember him saying it to somebody. Manifel, it's not murder, fine. If it's murder, so then how can you do it? And he was adamant in Napsach Halach, which is, I don't think anybody else possible like that. But it was very, 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 very adamant. I remember one time we had in the shul where we needed a question of fetal reduction. Now, I never heard of fetal reduction, so I called the Bible right away. He says, I never heard of fetal reduction either. I said, so what should we do? We need the answer. It's almost immediate. I need the answer today. The doctors are waiting what to do. So he says, call J. David Bleich. So you see that it was a person, most poskim probably didn't hear of J. David Bleich. I mean, the Chassidish poskim probably never heard of him. He was very much involved in all of the Piskei Halacha. Give me another example. When he wrote the Bavli Shul, the first one he wrote was Hamida. So he was a Rav of a Shul at that time, and he had given up being a Rosh Hashiva, Rav of a Shul at the time, and he wrote the amount of hours he was able to spend concentration, consecutive hours, we're talking about 15, 16 hours straight. His concentration was incredible concentration. And he wrote out all of Hilchos Nima. Okay, but he needed to get some haskamas. He had haskamas and das. A lot of people do that. I have haskamas in this sefer. So you say, ayin haskamas, whatever. He felt that this is a major stuff. It's Hilchos Nima. It's a major thing. It's a chorus. So what he needs to do is he needs to. So he went to a person called the Cheskas Tower. It was Cheskol Ross. The Cheskas Tower. It was named the Sat Medayim. So he went there. And he gave him the manuscript. It was a manuscript. I have a copy of the manuscript because we were me and Ruben Kazatzal, we were working with him on it. So the manuscripts. Usually you go in for a haskama. Oh, it's Leah Shane, very nice, and they write something. So the Cheskasar says, I'm gonna have to look up through the whole thing, come back in a few months. So he waited. He wanted a publisher. Just wanted a haskama. He comes back and he says, it's a nishput. What you wrote is a nishput. He didn't like about the sheep is a Mabu Shekara. And I argue about this, and he sat there with him for hours and hours, going over things. He rewrote that entire manuscript. I remember even I said to him, Rebbe, according to what you wrote the first time, I was okay. Now, according to what you wrote, I was Chai Visa Chorus. What am I supposed to do? So he said, don't worry. But the point is that's an honesty in halacha, tremendous honesty in halacha. When they had the controversy with the Anna, I can't pronounce it, the Anis Aitis parasite that you find in certain fish. So the Eidah Charedus, that's the bottom line. Eidah Charedus said you can have any herring, not a problem. Shmaltz herring, it's fine. Why? Because the Gemara says if you find it in the stomach, so then it came from outside. But if you find it by the skin, so then it's really spontaneous generation. Okay, so that's the Eidah Paschal, like the Gemara, like the Shulchan Aruch, spontaneous generation. So I remember the Rafael said there's no such thing as spontaneous generation. You can't eat it. You can't eat it. You have to examine it to see if they're there. He did the same thing with those coal pots. He turned New York over into coal pots. The water in Brooklyn, they said, had small little aquatic creatures that are microscopic. So a Moshe Possum, if you see a speck but doesn't look like a creature, so then it's not an issue. Because when the Torah of Malachi Asher, like Rabbi Kibbeh with the Mifsak and says the Torah. But the father says, you see it. If you see it, so then it's there. And so look, find out what it is. Magnify it and see what it is. So now you know what it is. So the speck means that's what it is. And he was very adamant. I remember that winter of David Feinstein. He said, my father passed away a long time ago. Nah, we shouldn't worry about this. You don't have to worry about it. If it's just a speck, that's not considered. And he was adamant. He just was, and people, they bring samples of water. Show me where you see it. Show me where you see it. Show me where you see it. And they really put a tremendous amount of pressure on him, and he just stood. That's how it comes out. I personally, I'm a rabbi of a modern Orthodox shul. So when I first started, I took my maris to revival. That's what I would do. Now he was very machmir. I have to tell you, he was very machmir. And I would ask him shilas and hilchos nida. He was very machmir. At one point, after enough of it. He said, please don't come to me with Yeshua Shilas. It's not right. I'll give you a different posek, a very reliable posek. It's a different approach. But it's not right for your Baal HaBatim that you should come to me, and that every time that you come, I should be Machmir. I held that was a godless. I held that godless of a human being. The truth is, in the past number of years, there's a story of Baal HaKamenetzi. Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetzky was a big posek. Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetzky, a big Rosh Yeshiva Torah Das, and Sal Rivlin, and okay. So he was a posek. He was from Europe. He was a real posek. So I know the story is true, and he was a posek. At one point, he said, "I can't posek anymore." I asked him why. He said, "Because I gave up psak halacha to somebody, and I told him it was a tosis that I'm not tezayin on the base, and the truth is it was tezayin on an olive." So I saw that I can't, Fazenotaisvis. For him, that was called Fazenotaisvis. I can't pass it anymore. And Revival felt exactly the same just a very few years ago. So I called him up with a question about a hearing aid. The hearing aids have changed, etc., etc. So he said to me, I can't pass it anymore. said, you write a tshuva, send it to me, and I'll see if it's a good tshuva. But I just don't have a head. I said, what does that mean? It's like not that hard, you know? Whatever. I said, there's one Zalman has a tshuva, there's plenty of tshuvas on it. He said, I have to go through the sugya from beginning to end. And I no longer have the power of concentration that I need to paskin the halacha. Rapsa Nigla. It's like an incredible, incredible honesty of a person. That was the person who said, if I can just say another minute to say, okay, say something about his personality. You know, if you knew him, if you knew him, anybody here know him? If you knew him, he could appear to be a cold, right? He could appear to be a cold person. He could appear to be, you know, he was very businesslike, very, very businesslike. You know, here's the question, here's the answer. Have a good day. He was very, very businesslike. But in fact, the sensitivity that he had to other human beings was incredible. Now, I'm not telling you, somebody sent this to me, Lou Berman, some of you know Lou Berman. He sent me this piece. It was written by a teacher in a very modern Orthodox high school. And she's not only a modern Orthodox teacher, but she's a self-avowed feminist, a very strong feminist. And she wrote a piece about Revival, which I thought so typified who he was. And she said, what a loss for me and my family. My father davened in that shul. Me and my sister used to go all of the time to the shul. We loved his speeches. They were always so human. They always had a message that was a contemporary message, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. She said, but we often had questions. And we would go to him. And he would sit with us. And he was not known for sitting long with people to answer their questions, but he would sit with us until he was sure that not only we understood why he was saying what he was saying, but that we were able to really empathize with the Psak Halacha. We were able to see that it's the correct Psak Halacha for ourselves. And that's something that was a tailor-made thing. He was able to, I don't know how to say it in English, he would shots up a person, evaluate a person, and be able to see what they needed. He didn't change his Halacha for who you were, but he was able to see what you needed in terms of his personal touch, his personal relationship with the individual. Because we saw him as a Rebbe. We'd ask him every question. One of the boys once mentioned they got married. Everybody is married, right? No, I guess not. They got married. So, Bo'o Bilas Mitzvah Polish. The boy calls him up in the middle of the night. Rebbe, I don't know if I was Bo'o Bilas Mitzvah. So he says, he said, this I heard from the boy. He said, the answer to your question, Ha'isha Tzricha V'Sayera. That's the answer to your question. Then you'll know the answer. He would deal with people on this level. Would you call up your Rebbe in the middle of the night to ask him this question? Hope not. Okay. But people had that feeling. He was your Rebbe. He was your Rebbe for everything. You whatever you wanted. He would come to your simcha, even if it was sometimes difficult. He would come, he would dance, he used to do a special dance, the Zorba, the Greek dance, he had a special kind of a dance, and he would come, it was delight. It was a song, a gorgeous song. Gorgeous. It's not Mordechai. But he was just an unusual person. And you can see, if you ever see any pictures of him, you would always see, but that was so natural, the smile on his face. He had this beatific smile, which was a smile of, he loved Hashem, he loved people, and that's the person that he was, and Chaval al-Da Avin, I could really say that. So his legacy is the Badei HaShulchan. Rav Huttner said this, even if I remember correctly, in that first sefer that he gave, he spoke there about Maaseh Bereishis and Maaseh Merkava, and he said that over there that there are certain people that are Mesuvalim, but we know this from the Nitziv. The Nitziv said, you're either born to be a Posek, or you're going to be a Lamban, but you're not going to be a Posek. And the Futner saw in him, he detected in him, even when before he even did it, he was a Rosh Shiva. He saw him, he detected in him, that not only can he be the Maaseh of the Rishis of Halacha, be able to create, but able to take it, do a Maaseh and a Kovah, to take the Madama Milsa in different areas, and to be able to extract. And that's what Rabbi Yoshua was saying about the Moshe. To be able to take that, to take from the Rishonim and learn Pshat in the Rishonim to extract the principle of Halacha, to be able to adapt that as a precedent to use in other Halachos, even when the other poskim would not be that apparent. And that's a special chush that he had. And again, thank you for giving me the opportunity to vent a little bit. I needed to speak about it, to process.
Who did Rafael look up to in Psach Halacha? I mean, Chodra was his Rebbe, but he's not known as a person.
Rav Kusma. He learned by, I'm sure, Rav Kusma used to do the Shir. Because we were on Crown Street, and Rafael spent many, many years in the Kola, which was on President Street. And Rav Kusma had a yeshiva, you know, Crown Heights? It's really, we're talking about a few blocks away.
Yeah.
And of course, my yeshiva, Netzach Yisrael, was right next to Chol Beit Torah. You know, Chol Beit Torah. So the five who used to go, he used to give a pilpul shir on Thursday, meaning of course, my pilpul on Thursday, and afterwards he'd be exhausted. So go into his apartment, and the five will go in to keep them in this game. That's where he went to. And yes. in the beginning, with Hilchot Nidah, void this love of Rebbe.
And he also used to go for Phil Day with every Chalamari to speak to official Hershkowitz.
Yeah. See, there's a whole different part of him, which is really, you can't speak about him without speaking about Rafutnam and Chaim Bolin. You can't, they're inseparable. Chaim Bolin is a unique institution, a very unique institution, in that everybody was so kufuf, and still, even kufuf, it's like Rafutnam is still alive. They're so kufuf to his shitas, they're so kufuf to his avoda, to his way of doing things. And Rafival is a product, he is a product of that. Rafival used to give my mother. Every yontif, Rafutnik gave a mimer, and Rav Yenison should live and be well. He gave a mimer, but that was part of who they were. They were extensions, they were the continuation. Like if you look in Rafival's svarim, besides giving a Shevach to his wife, Novas Beso, she's an incredible woman, Rebbe Tzimifka. But and everyone said that his children should continue in the path, and they all did. They were all, his son Rav Yom is going to be a brother. Same approach to Psach Halacha as his father. There's a certain continuity that they have. You know, we try at Yeshiva, I'm sure everybody tries to create that same continuity. So to a large extent, you're very successful. But the Chaim Bolin, I think, is like wildly successful. And that's really so much part of who he was.
Did he have any hesitation about writing a Mishnah Brura type of sefer?
Yes. But when he saw that the Cheskas Tara did it, so he asked people. I don't know exactly who he asked. But you have to keep in mind, I'm a Chaim Bolin person. We were taught extreme derech eretz, extreme yirah for a Rebbe. So you would be very comfortable asking things, but within parameters. It never became informal, ever.
Why did he stop being a Rosh Hashiva and become a
Rebbe? Nobody knows.
And the yeshiva was still thriving.
When he left, so then Pinchas Chan took it over. See, he, you know, we're dealing with Jews, you're dealing with a lot of politics. He got an offer to go to Yeshiva Brooklyn and be the Rosh Yeshiva. But like Manas Mendel was still alive, he made the offer. And then Rabbi Mendel died, so he had a son, Shlomo. So the Shem said, right? My father made the deal, I didn't make the deal.
In the Yatei they have a whole write up on their Bible. It's available in the library upstairs.
Okay, that's good. Okay, so all be well.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.